The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hi, this is Mike Edwards with another edition of The Armchair Traveler from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And over the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the National Geographic Traveler. And before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you, neither the Triangle Radio Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we will be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Well, say you'd like a good cup of tea? Well, today on Armchair Traveler, writer Lisa C. takes us in search of one perfect cup as we savor China's divine drink at its source. Her article is in the April-May 2019 issue of National Geographic Traveler. Let us begin. We are deep in the tea mountains of Yishuangbanna Prefecture in China's Yunnan province. Villages inhabited by the Dai, Bulong, Lahu, Akka, and other ethnic minorities lie across ravines or peek out from the forest. Glancing up a hillside, I spot people perched in the uppermost branches of some tea trees. Our driver pulls over, four of us climb out of the car, and then we hike up a narrow path to reach the workers. The women wear scarves, some hand-woven, some embroidered, and some decorated with silver balls and other trinkets. The men's faces are cracked and as dark as saddle leather from lifetime spent in the sun. We pepper them with questions. How old are these tea trees? How many generations has your family worked on tea as tea pickers? And do you process your own tea? These folks don't seem too surprised to see us or to hear our questions. It's tea-picking season in Yunnan's tea mountains, and over the past few years, more and more visitors, including myself, have come in search of Puo tea, the most valuable and collected of all the world's teas, and to explore the birthplace of tea. Tea is the second most popular drink in the world after water. It was discovered in 2737 BC by Emperor Shennong, also known as the Divine Husbandman, when some tea leaves accidentally blew into his pot of water, or so the legend goes. For more than 4,700 years, tea has traveled the world, so that today it's grown in India, Nepal, Japan, Kenya, and other mountainous countries between the tropics of Cancer and Capricorn. Tea takes many forms, black, green, oolong, dark, white, but they all come from an evergreen plant called Camellia sinensis. For centuries, tea has been used as a form of money and to pay tribute. It has also been taxed as precious commodity. Any American fifth grader can tell you about the dramatic role tea played in Boston Harbor in the years leading up to the Revolutionary War. Tea is also central to China's three great schools of philosophical thought. Confucius taught that tea could help people understand their inner dispositions. Buddhists believe that drinking tea is one of the four ways to concentrate the mind, along with walking, feeding fish, and sitting quietly, to help link people to the realms of meditation. Taoists say that tea, which they accept as an ingredient in the elixir of immortality, puts you in harmony with the natural world. In other words, tea drinking is infused throughout every aspect of life in China. It's part of every day and for every level of society. Many people start the morning by dropping a handful of tea leaves into a thermos to carry with them and refill with more hot water throughout the day. On just about any corner, men can be found sitting on upturned crates or at modest open-air shops, drinking tea from glass jars and reading newspapers. Towns and cities across China have tea shops for everyday man and woman, with shelves lined with rattan-covered thermoses, gaily colored tins filled with different types of tea, and big pots over open flames for heating water. Many customers still wear the old blue Mao suits or green military jackets. In big, wealthy cities, there are tea emporiums with interiors designed by Hermes and other internationally known designers, where the clientele sips brews worth thousands of dollars from elegant cups and poured by women wearing traditional kapos. In offices, so-called tea girls pour fresh brews for file clerks and billionaire bosses. For the country's elite, tea is seen as a status symbol, an investment opportunity, and the ideal gift to cement ties or broaden guanxi connections. Even a low-grade tea can be precious to the owner. Sharing it means sharing a treasure of taste, welcoming, and friendship. At home, when guests come to visit, the first question is always, Nichi lema, have you eaten yet? Which can be answered with yes or no. The second question is, Nichi chama, do you drink tea? Which can be answered only with a yes. I'm a lifelong tea drinker, but I'm hardly an expert, which means that I need guidance on this trip. Many travelers go on special tea tours or stay at hotels or guest houses that specialize in visits to the tea mountains. Others journey by themselves, relying on luck to meet tea farmers, processors, and dealers. I'm traveling with Linda Lue, the owner of Bana Tea Company, a small online focused on pure tea. Importer and seller Jenny Dodd, also with us, and who does tea presentations, and Buddha Tamang, the owner of Horizon Bardu Valley Tea Plantation and Factory in Nepal. They are tea professionals, while I'm just a writer. As low woman on the totem pole, I ride on the bump in the middle of the back seat for most of the trip. Parts of our journey have been carefully planned with appointments along the way, but a surprising number of our encounters are the result of serendipity. Pulling up to a house at the forest edge to talk to a tea farmer who urges us to sample his tea, walking through a town, peeking into a tea factory's courtyard, and being invited in, or wandering along a side street, seeing what looks like a tea shop, and starting to chat with the owner, who soon kills a chicken for our lunch. Linda, Jenny, Buddha, and I first meet up in Guangzhou, where we visit the Shangkun Tea Market, the largest in the world, covering several square blocks. Then we fly through Kunming to Xinjiang, where we are greeted by Li Lin, a retired schoolteacher, who now works as a driver during tea picking season. He's exceedingly careful behind the wheel, telling us if I get in an accident with foreigners, it would be very complicated. Soon we reach Minghai, a small town that serves as the launching point for visitors to the Tea Mountains. Although it's late, our hotel and the one across the street are aglow with lights and noisy with revelers. It's tea picking season, and these are tea lovers, collectors, and dealers who've come to do business and apparently party into the wee hours. The next morning, after a traditional breakfast of congee and bowl of warm, fresh soy milk, we go to the lobby to await the arrival of tea master Zhen Kuo Yi. He sweeps in with all the charisma of a movie star. He wears loose pants that billow about his legs and an untucked denim shirt. He travels lightly across the floor in kung fu slippers. All eyes are immediately drawn to him and his entourage. People ask if they can take photographs. Tea Master Chen is that famous. Later, I'll see billboards with his likeness drawn 10 feet wide. He takes us first to his Guangzhou 88 Qing Dry Store Tea Company, where his partner, Mr. Liu, leads us through a tea tasting. He warms a gavan, a special type of covered cup used for tea tastings, and small teacups with warm water. He then mounds the gavan with loose tea leaves. This tea is from the village of Lao Bengshang, known as the home of the King of Pu'er Teas, which are prized for their musky, masculine qualities. Tea from this area can cost as much as $8,000 per kilo, yet there's a kind of carelessness to the way Mr. Liu pours it, allowing it to slosh over the rims of the cup, symbolizing abundance. This is without a doubt the most expensive and delicious tea I've ever tasted, and I'm extremely lucky to be a guest. Even our driver gets to try the tea, although he takes a rather dim view of the extravagance. In 20 years that the government changes, he warns, it'll be okay and all of you will be in trouble. Tea Master Chen asked me to look for the Hui Gan, returning flavor that is unique to Pu'er. As I sip the tea, its flavor arises from the back of my throat and fills my mouth with a minty, refreshing sensation. This is not your grandma's Lipton tea. Most tea comes from tea shrubs that are grown on terraces on vast plantations. As a result, the leaves have a consistent taste. How they become Earl Grey, Lapshang, Soshang, or English breakfast tea is a matter of processing and post-processing. Pu, on the other hand, comes from the ancient tea leaves that grow wild in the Yishuang Bana Prefecture. Most or some of the trees are hundreds of years old, with many more than 1,000 years old. No one has watered, fertilized, or sprayed them. Since they've survived on their own for so long, the taste of the leaves from each tree is unique. Unlike other teas, Puang can be brewed multiple times. The first brew lasts only a few seconds, while the 10th or even later can brew take as long as 5 minutes. With each infusion, the flavor changes, coming from different parts of the leaf and invigorating different parts of the tongue. But what makes Puang truly unique is that its nature changes with age in the same way that garden leaves turn into mulch. And Puang can age naturally or through artificial accelerated fermentation, and like wine, its value grows over time. People collect this and savor Puang teas that are 10 to 50 years old. The tea can sell for $10,000 and up for a few grams. Tea Master Chen takes us to the Tea Horse Ancient Road Scenic District in Mangai County, which features demonstration tea terraces, recreations of tea warehouses, rooms for processing tea, areas where men and horses slept and ate, and all the paraphernalia that accompanied tea caravans. For over 1,000 years, men carried 150-pound packs of tea on their backs through rain, snow, heat, and humidity, overland in different directions, to the capital, toward Hong Kong and Guangzhou, to Vietnam, Myanmar, India, and Thailand. The most important route was to Tibet, where the tea was traded for war horses, hence the Tea Road, or Tea Horse Road name. The trade routes were active until the outbreak of the Second Sino-Japanese War, when they were repurposed to include moving troops and medical supplies. By the time World War II ended and the Civil War began, using the tea horse road to transport tea had become obsolete. Tea reminds us to slow down and escape the pressures of modern life, Tea Master Chen expounds as we walk through the exhibits. It allows the newly wealthy to escape the poverty of the past and the poor to appreciate the finer things in life. Our citizens can be wary of what the government might do, so tea is also a safe way to invest our money. I consider Puang to be a drinkable antique. Tea is alive, and every sip, through the powerful senses of taste and smell, opens our hearts to remember family, love, and hardships overcome. While these sentiments may be particularly true for the Chinese, people in other cultures also see tea an opportunity for respite, comfort, and tranquility. A couple of days later, Mr. Li drives us to Nanyuan Mountain. Chen Zhen, the owner of the Fujinji Warehouse, welcomes us with a tea tasting. He welcomes us with a tea tasting. The lodging is rustic, but the compound is tidy and the views are magnificent. Chen Zhen's daughter and a friend make dinner using ingredients mostly grown up on the property. Snow pea and fish soup, pork with mint, fresh bamboo shoots, sautéed green beans with chilies, and scrambled eggs with tomatoes. After dinner, under the flickering light of oil lamps, Chen Zhen leads a sing-along for his guest, featuring popular Chinese songs as well as Akka and other ethnic minority love songs. One of our prearranged meetings here is at the home of Atu, who is the patriarch of an Akka family, well known for the quality of the tea they grow. The Akka don't have surnames. Instead, the last syllable of the father's name becomes the first syllable of the son's name, continuing for generations. Atu's village, as are all Akka villages, easy to find. The entrance is marked by a gate decorated with carved wooden figures. A woman with engorged breasts and a man with his genitalia in proud, exuberant form. These sculptures, along with carved spirit animals across the gate's beam, protect the village from bad spirits. Atu's sister, Abu, serves as our hostess. We sit in the family's tea pavilion, composed of 4 bamboo posts with a roof made of thatch, while she pours teas using local spring water. When she speaks, she tucks her legs delicately to the side with her hands clasped in her lap. She tells us she picks between 10 and 20 kilos of tea leaves a day during harvest season. I'm slow and careful, she says, because tea is a gift from God. As we sip the liquid, she explains that tea from Nanua Mountain has unique floral notes with hints of rock sugar sweetness. She reminds us you're drinking history. I ask about the changes that have transpired fired in the Tea Mountains over the past decade. "We were famous in the past," she answers with a smile. "We always had the work. We walked everywhere. No one was far. My family started to be less poor 12 years ago. That's when we got electricity and bought our first television." She used her own money to buy the family's first washing machine. Abu and her sister-in-law teach us every step of artisanal tea production, how to pluck tea buds between the thumbnail and fleshy side of the forefinger, gather them in a basket, and later lay them out for their sun bath, which allows the initial wilting to begin. "We want the leaves to absorb the sun's fragrance," Abu explains. "We each have an opportunity to kill the green by tossing the leaves in a giant wok placed over a roaring fire. The aroma is intoxicating. The leaves crackle. It's hard work, shoving gloved hands along a heated wok surface, then lifting and tossing the leaves, but it's not as exhausting as the next task. The hot leaves are placed on a woven bamboo mat and kneaded like dough to extract even more liquid. If you don't love tea," Abu says as we lay out the leaves to rest overnight, "you can't make good tea." Then it's time for Mr. Lee to drive us down the mountain to Mingai and then up another road to Yuvu, one of the ancient collection centers for where we once called the Great Tea Mountains, or six Great Tea Mountains, a starting point of the Tea Horse Road, and for the home of the Queen of Pua Teas, which are known for their feminine, alluring, and radiant flavors. Today, the town is in transition. Most of the original buildings on the main street have been replaced by concrete storefronts, beauty salons, and barbershops, cafes, and small enterprises selling dry goods, produce, and meat. Construction noise and dust fill the air. That said, our hotel is modern and clean. It's built within a faux Chinese palace style and caters to those who've come in search of Pua. On our first morning, we eat an open-air air stand where fiery broth boils fearlessly in a big vat and then is poured over freshly made noodles. A side table offers condiments to add to our bowls, fresh chilies, cilantro, hot sauces, and a variety of pickles. We sit on kitty-sized chairs around a low table right on the street. The other customers are like us, men and women seeking tea. Most of them are Chinese, but there are a few Koreans and Japanese, too. Many of them are on the instant messaging system WeChat, making plans to visit farmers or talking to dealers about the volatility of tea prices. There's a gold rush atmosphere to the goings-on, a sense of people hunting for an unknown vein of buying their way to knowledge. Every person seems to be checking out the other customers. "How prosperous are you? Can I compete with you? Can I beat your price?" One man sheds his caution, opens a valise tucked between his feet to show us a bundle of 100 yuan notes and says, "Where are you going today? Who do you think will have the best tea this year?" We're vague about our answers. He's just as coy when it comes to responding to our inquiries. Yuvu is home to 40 tea factories, not counting all the mom-and-pop establishments, and every family picks and home processes tea. We drink expensive teas that have hints of apricot and cheap teas that cost about $5 a kilo and leave the mouth as puckered as sucking an unripe persimmon would. We drive on dirt roads that seem to lead to the middle of nowhere, but it turns out we aren't quite as much in the middle of nowhere as we think. One day, bumping along a narrow dirt road that runs through a tea terrace, a van comes at us from the opposite direction. It's filled with tea tourists from Japan. While the drivers negotiate how to get the two vehicles past each other, the visitors from the United States, Nepal, and Japan stand together on the hillside, trade tea stories, and take photos. On our last day in Yuvu, our foursome veers off the main drag to search for the historic starting point of the Tea Horse Road. It's as if we're stepping back in time. Many original houses, hundreds of years old, made of unfired clay brick with upturned leaves, remain. As we meander through the serpentine pathways, we see wide rattan trays filled with freshly picked tea leaves stacked on garden walls, lying on patios, or perched on verandas so the leaves can have their sun bath. Before each house and in every courtyard, women, and many of whom wear the traditional dress of their ethnic minority, sit around other wide trays mounded with processed tea leaves. These they sort at a leaf at a time, according to grade and color. It's unbelievably time-consuming, yet everywhere I look, the women are chatting, gossiping, and sometimes singing to while away the hours of meticulous work. We reach the clearing that marks the start of the T-Horse Road. Huge camphor trees provide shade, as they must have in the past. The road itself is made of cobblestones and is about 5 feet wide. It's easy to imagine horses neighing, the bells that decorated their halters jingling, men shouting orders, meats being cooked over open fires, and teams of laborers grunting as they hoisted the heavy packs onto their backs to join their caravans. Today the clearing seems a little lonely. Some children play in the lower branches of a camphor. An old man, toothless, bent with age, and supported by a homemade walking stick, takes an afternoon stroll along the storied road. There are those who say tourism has ruined Yunnan. Kunming has become too modernized, or Kunming, and Dali has lost its charm. The Tiger Leaping Gorge and Lujiang are too crowded, but Zhuanguangbanna Prefecture's natural wonders and deep cultural experiences are still mostly pristine, and tea offers a unique way to explore both. Some tea aficionados will tell you that tea requires a lifetime of study and dedication to fully enjoy it, but it can also be experienced at its most basic level. To walk any street, visit any kitchen, or go to any wedding in China is to understand the adage, drink tea and make friends. Wow. Well, writer Lisa C. is a best-selling author, and her books include The Tea Girl of Hummingbird Lane and, most recently, The Island of Sea Women. And accompanying her article, we have a sidebar titled Travel-Wise Tea Essentials, some ideas for you if you're thinking about taking the tea tour in China. Linda Lui, a tea educator and owner of Bana Tea Company, which specializes in pu'er tea, gives us her tips for how to taste and buy tea. Now, how to taste? In China, people take their tea straight without adding any sugar or milk. The exceptions are the modern boba tea joints. Now, tea shops are not equipped with any condiments to accompany the tea. What is known in the West as black tea is called red tea or hongsha in China. Pu'er tea and other post-fermented teas are the black teas or called haicha. If you are traveling to tea-producing regions, ask to try a tea that is well-known to that region. Observe and learn how the locals brew and drink their tea. Your tea tasting can turn out to be an intimate, informative, and enriching cultural experience. How to buy? Well, the majority of the tea shops in China offer complimentary tea tastings, so you can try before you buy. Take your time to try various teas until you find one you like. Avoid buying the most expensive tea in the shop to preclude overpaying for a tea. Most tea shops in China are willing to bargain. However, some may offer you more tea in lieu of a discount. Insist on the discount, because you do not want to end up with more tea than you need. Some pu'er tea shops may claim that their tea cakes come with a certificate of authentication. Currently, there is no official entity in Yunnan that issues such a certificate. They are of little worth in guaranteeing the value of the tea you purchase. And let me spell out pu'er for you, just so you know what you're looking for. It's P-U, and then you have an accent mark over the U, and then U-R-H, pu'er tea. And where to buy these teas? Well, you have the Guangzhou 88 Qing Dry Store Tea Company, and you go to number 2-17, Building 21 on the Huaiyu Daxing Ochai County and Huaxing Bana in Yunnan. Yeah, just ask for the Guangzhou. I'm sure they can tell you where that is. Boy, that's all one address. Can you believe that? And that took three lines. And then we have the Nanang Tea Shop, a little simpler. That's number 7, Building 18, District 1 of the Kangol Tea Cultural Center. And that's at number 188 Guonan Avenue, Kunming, Yunnan. So there you go. Some great places to travel and to experience tea tasting at its best. Well, we're going to close out our journey on today's Armchair Traveler by returning to the June-July 2018 issue of National Geographic Traveler. And writer Heather Greenwood Davis continues to offer some unforgettable adventures in an article, Epic Summer. And we resume with Quest for Animal Lovers, and we start where dinos rule in Illinois. Sue, the 40-and-a-half-foot-long T-Rex that has presided over Chicago's Field Museum since 2000, is heading for some needed updates. And in the meantime, a 122-foot-long Titanosaur, the biggest dinosaur ever discovered, will take the throne in time to all summer visitors and celebrate the museum's 125th anniversary. And you can get more information online at fieldmuseum.org, fieldmuseum.org. Then we head to Mexico under the sea. Playful sea lions whiz around you as you swim and snorkel with them, but don't touch. In the Sea of Cortez on a Cabo Adventures day trip with 891 fish species, these clear waters have been designated a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Cabo-adventures.com/en/tour/Sea of Cortez Adventure gets you more information online. And I'll give you that in a little more detail here. That is cabo-adventures.com/en/tour/CEA-OF-Cortez-Adventure. Wave action. California, surf with the Mavericks. You won't be riding the waves at Mavericks, the famed surf break in Half Moon Bay where waves can top 60 feet. But you can learn to surf on smaller swells with those who do. And boat tours get you close enough to the break to watch the pros show how it's done. Learn more at maverickexperience.com. That's maverickexperience.com. And then we sail on to Virginia in the historic seaport of Norfolk, home to the world's largest naval base. Sailing is second nature. Sign the family up for lessons at Sail Nauticus, a nonprofit community sailing center, and you will head out with qualified instructors on the Elizabeth River. Afterward, go below deck at the dockside battleship Wisconsin. SailNauticus.org has all the details for you. SailNauticus.org. Then on to West Virginia, where we paddle with patriots. Harper's Ferry brims with history. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, John Brown, Stonewall Jackson, and W.E.B. Du Bois top the list of celebrated names, with links to this town at the confluence of the Shenandoah and Potomac Rivers. Pair yesteryear with some right now rafting on rapids that range from Class 1 to Class 3. RiverRiders.com is where you go for more information. That's RiverRiders.com for more information about paddling with the patriots. Now, how about nurturing some roots? Well, we go to Hawaii first. Aloha, actually. Want to hula like Mona or undertake the ukulele? Well, located on a particular stretch of western Maui coast, both Kanaspali Beach Hotel and Western Ania Ocean Villas have cultural centers that offer classes on Hawaiian language, lahuala weaving, lei making, and other experiences geared to the Oana family. Or that's what family is in Hawaiian. That's Oana. And you go online to get more information at KBH Maui, M-A-U-I, kbhmaui.com/Hawaii-culture. You can also try Nania. And that's Westinnania.com/cultural center. Westinnania.com/cultural center. Now to Mississippi and some civil rights lessons. Exploring 8 interactive galleries at the new Mississippi Civil Rights Museum in downtown Jackson will likely get your family talking about modern-day events. It's no accident. As Katie Blunt, director of the Mississippi Department of Archives and History, notes, understanding where we are today is shaped in every way by where we have come from in our past. And more information about this is available at mcrm.mdaha.ms.gov. That's mdaha.ms.gov. So there you go. And that brings us to the end of today's journey of Armchair Traveler. Hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, reminding you the content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. Comments and questions can be directed to 919-832-5138. Bye-bye.